Greetings, cops from shaders across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Jeremy Kirk, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We have yet another guest host. I think Neil's recovering from turkey addiction.
I think he's in some kind of a food coma at this point.
I think he's seeking out help from Dr. Drew.
Oh, Lord.
What is it? Celebrity rehab for turkey.
That would be amazing if Neil's on celebrity rehab next season. He's addicted to turkey and mashed potatoes.
Yeah, and you know, he could be like stuffing his face. He catches him in his room and you have like a dark. They're stuffing a turkey, like an entire turkey. You know, like in Girl Interrupted when Brittany Murphy's character we haven't even gotten the contact information. We are derailed.
We have derailed. Because now I'm trying to remember about Girl Interrupted and what Brittany Murphy was. She
or
was in
Clea
that.
Duvall. One of them was like had like a chicken stashed in her bed. Am I wrong about that?
I don't know. Let's just go to Trading Places and when Dan Aykroyd was smuggling the turkey in his beard.
Yes, the best line in the entire movie. That's the best line of the movie. It doesn't mean anything. That's what I say whenever people say Merry Christmas.
It doesn't mean anything, but you know exactly the scene when someone brings it up.
Absolutely. We have Jeremy Kirk. First, let's give the where to find us, Fat Guys in the Movies. You can get us at fatguysinthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes, search Fat Guys in the Movies, and Neil and I pop right up. Email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can call us 740-205-6456. We do have a voicemail, but I'm waiting for Neil to get back on the show before I read it, because it was actually addressed to him. But we have Jeremy coming in, sitting in. I've been on Jeremy's show a couple times, and I've had Jeremy's co-host, Tim Buell, from The Golden Briefcase. Jeremy, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and why we should listen to you.
Why you should listen to me? Oh, wow. I feel like I'm doing an interview for a job position. Well, I am the co-host of The Golden Briefcase. We are a weekly show where we talk about movies and trailers, DVD releases, all sorts of things.
And you actually talk to important people. I just don't.
We talk to important people like Kevin Carr.
Gentlemen. You've had like real directors on your show.
Yeah, we've had Matt Reeves. In the past month or so, we had Matt Reeves on, Gareth Edwards. We're not promoting this fact, but Darren Aronofsky is on this week's episode to say hi. Before we lost his connection and never got him back, but we get directors on, we get screenwriters on, actors, but we also, I think our bread and butter is getting notable people around the movie blogosphere, such as yourself,
like me,
like you.
That's sweet.
And I think you hold the record, I believe.
I've done it three times.
Three times, yeah. So I think that's a record.
If Darren Aronofsky calls in a couple more times, then he might beat me.
Yeah, just to say hi. Yeah. But you can always do that, too. You know that.
I should. I should sometimes just say, I'm. This is my Darren Aronofsky call. How you doing, guys? I got to go make another call.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah, practice that, and we'll run with it.
Okay. This is a weird week. If you follow big release movies, there's two wide releases that are wide in definition by like the fact that they're like 1,500 theaters, and they didn't screen either for me. I don't think you've had a chance to see these.
I have not had a chance to see either one of these films.
Oh, in fact, one of them you were like, "Is that opening?"
Well, I know. I thought it had opened limited, like a week or two ago, and I had no idea it was even getting a wide release.
I think maybe if by limited, maybe it opened in the Ukraine.
Possibly. Like that. That's pretty limited.
The first one is The Warrior's Way, martial arts and cowboys. Oh, my.
How can you go wrong?
He was a legend. Born on the battlefield. I have made you the strongest of all my warriors. An assassin so dangerous, no army could defeat him. Until the day...
You must kill the last of their clan.
He refused his mission. He may burn in his past, but he will pay for this betrayal.
I don't know anything about this movie aside from what I've seen in the trailers. And what I get from the trailer, the first half of the trailer, it makes me think it's like in another language, because it looks like an international trailer where they don't show any dialogue.
Right.
And then suddenly Kate Bosworth and Jeffrey Rush show up speaking English. Yeah. And I'm wondering, is this just like a giant Power Rangers episode where they just edit people into the movie?
It very well could be. It really kind of looks like you got your Django in my Lone Wolf and Cub a little bit. which hey, I'm all for. If that results in some kind of an amazing movie, I am really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's not screening in town here.
No.
Who's associated with it? Is it Sam Raimi? Somebody's name's attached to it.
I believe one of the Lord of the Rings producers is one of the producers on there. I don't know his name, though. Okay. I don't know if Sam Raimi has anything to do with it.
Okay, I could be totally wrong. But I probably am. But yeah, I've seen the ads, and most recently I saw the ad when I went and saw Skyline. I had my son with me, and, mm-hmm. and he's like, I want to see that. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I do too. But they're not showing it to us. And it's so bad that in the earlier in the week, I was checking to see if there were midnight shows, because they do a lot of midnight shows in Columbus where I live, because there's the universities here and a lot of mm-hmm. people go to it. And I couldn't find it, and I couldn't find any midnight shows. In fact, I couldn't find Friday shows for this movie.
Oh, geez.
I'm sure it's been rectified.
They've completely relegated it to just Saturday and Sunday showings. It's that bad.
I think it's going to be one of these movies that it's also known as, let's just let Harry Potter win again.
Probably, yeah. Or Tangled. Why fight either one of those behemoths?
Yes, it's a hairy weekend for this movie.
Definitely.
I guess you would say.
Yeah.
So let's move. This one gets a preemptive suck. By contract, we have to say that. You know, because they didn't show it to us. It must suck.
Sorry.
Next one is The Nutcracker 3D, which is another version of The Nutcracker in 3D.
See that city? It's my city. Before the Rat King took it from me.
His kingdom was overthrown. A curse was cast upon him. And he was banished from his world forever.
Hello, Mary. You can talk. I've been waiting for someone like you. Only you have the power to break the curse.
Yeah, but this one's in 3D. Amazing.
This is the thing, though. I've not heard any. I like heard about this the way you like hear your like cousin has a bowel obstruction. You know, you just sort of like hear you like maybe your aunt and your mom are talking about it at like a family dinner, and it's kind of like
just absorbing.
Yeah, I don't even know any. I mean, it's the Nutcracker. They've done this about a million times.
Well, oh God, yeah. This is like, it's like A Christmas Carol. How many times do we need another version of this story brought to the screen? This one, I think, has Nathan Lane, though, in it.
Yeah, it's got some names in it.
Hey.
It's like a couple big names and then all these Russian names, and that's it.
Bunch of Ruskies and Nathan Lane and John Turturro.
And Macaulay Culkin is nowhere near this movie. I don't know. I don't think this... Again, I don't think it's high on the radar. I couldn't find any screenings in Columbus, again, earlier in the week. So.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if we're getting it at all. I haven't checked just because I don't care.
Yeah. Well, preemptive suck for this one. We got to go to a break, and we'll be back.
Hey, we are back here at Fat Guys at the Movies. Talk about more fat guys and more movies, always.
Well, we're not actually going to be talking about. You know what's weird is there aren't any fat people in these next two movies.
You know, I said that. No, there aren't. You know, I thought that. I said it, and like as the words were coming out of my mouth, I realized there are no fat people in either of these movies.
Yeah, I mean, extremely not fat people in these movies. But yeah, it's weird. And we talked about Neil in the previous segment, so I think our fat guy quota has been reached.
Okay, we're good. We're good to go on the fat people.
So we're going to talk about movies that we actually have seen, and these are coming out. These are in limited release this week, so for the, you know, the people in like four cities, you might actually get a chance to go see these.
All the New York and LA people that have to get their movies before the rest of the world.
Exactly.
So they feel special.
Snotty little...
That's okay.
You have seen this first one we're talking about, The Black Swan.
I have seen Black Swan, yes.
Causing a lot of buzz. But this one stars Natalie Portman as an emotionally brittle ballet soloist who is slowly descending into madness.
Our new Swan Queen, the exquisite Nina Sayers.
What's she doing here? He made me your alternate.
The only person standing in your way is you.
How do you know where I live?
I have my ways.
She's after me.
Nobody's after you.
Please believe me.
Sweet girl. Sweet girl.
What happened to my sweet girl? She's gone!
You take not so slowly.
Well, yes, yeah. If you say she's going crazy, it's not a very far drive.
She kind of falls off a sane cliff. I think
it's not a very high cliff. I'll tell you.
No, and it's not pleasant either. The trip down.
Yeah. You go first. I want you to take first crack at it. I want to hear what.
Black Swan. It is the latest film from Darren Aronofsky, and if you've seen any of his other films. We're talking Requiem for a Dream, The Fountain, The Wrestler, Pi. He is obsessed with obsession. Every lead character in any of his films are just obsessed with something to the point where it just shatters them mentally, oftentimes physically, and this is really, I think this is his masterpiece.
He does not do movies about healthy people.
No. No, you're not. Even a film like 127 Hours, where the main character cuts off his own arm to get out of a boulder.
Spoiler! That's the ending of the movie, man.
Oh, please! Like, you don't know that.
Well, I know that, but I don't know if everyone.
Like, the world doesn't know that. The Titanic sinks, people. Sorry.
Wow.
But I mean,
angry spoilerism from Jerry Kirk.
But anyway, I mean, the main character in that is so, even at the end of that movie, he's still so much healthier than any of the people in any of Darren Aronofsky's films. And I think Black Swan, it really is at its heart, it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
Just the way that he shoots it, the tone of the whole film, Natalie Portman's character in it. I mean, she's essentially descending into madness.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing movie.
It's very well done, and I think you're right, because I saw Scott Weinberg on Twitter was saying, he's like, it's a horror movie, people. Just deal with it. It's a horror movie. And he's absolutely right, because it is presented as a horror movie. Like you said, the way he shoots it, it has a very Cronenberg style to it, where it's that visceral, but, you know, very, just kind of gets behind your head. Kind of horror.
Yeah, it really kind of burrows in.
Yeah,
you really feel the movie underneath your skin. Yeah. I mean,
but nobody associated with it wants to even use that word because, you know, the award people and film critics and that kind of thing tend to really poo-poo anything that's related to horror. I mean, even like Silence of the Lambs, no one wants to call that a horror. It's a serial killer movie. It's, you know, it's police procedural, sure, but
and something like Seven. I mean, every couple of years we get a film that comes out that's just completely lauded by the critics, yet it's a horror movie and no one wants to come out and say, yeah, this is a horror movie.
Yeah, well, it's like I was watching the Alien anthology, the behind-the-scenes features, and they were talking about the first movie. And there was if you listen to the way they talk, they're basically like, oh, well, you know, we didn't want to just do a crappy horror movie. And I'm like, this is like the scariest movie of its era. And it is a horror movie. Don't say it's not. People tend to run from that.
And I personally am a huge fan of horror films. Mm-hmm. So I really don't appreciate the stigma that comes with the term horror.
Mm-hmm.
Get over it. I mean, if you make a good movie and it's a horror movie, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. There shouldn't be anything wrong with that. Unfortunately, there is.
So no, I agree with that. I think it's Darren Aronofsky's best movie.
Definitely.
I don't know if I'd put it as best of the year, but I think it clicked with me best. I think what's interesting is if you look at sort of like the pattern, you started out with Pi, which was very independent and very, you know, low budget and just, you know, by the skin of your teeth. And then he goes to Requiem for a Dream, where he sort of takes a lot of the style he used in Pi.
Right, and a lot of quick edits.
Yeah, and brings that to a big budget that where he doesn't have to, you know, like sell his blood or whatever to get the to get the movie made. And then he does The Fountain, which I hated, but it was all style and no story.
I disagree. I love The Fountain.
Well, I mean, there's no story to it. It's 20-minute story with a lot of style. Would you disagree with that?
We can agree to disagree on that. I thought there was a lot of story to The Fountain, and I thought that was a beautiful film.
Oh, okay. Well, you can have that.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Then you move to The Wrestler, which almost has no style. I mean, his stylistic choice was to not have style to it, in the sense.
Right. Yeah. Any sense of tone that you got from any of his first three films was really kind of launched out the window with The Wrestler.
Very low key, and I think.
Yeah.
Almost went so far to the other end with that, and with The Black Swan, it's somewhere in the middle. It's got style. It definitely has style, but it also has, you can see the influence of The Wrestler. You can see it is no longer just every single shot's a trick shot or anything like that. It's much more deliberately stylized and purposefully stylized.
Yeah, there are definitely moments in Black Swan where a lot of that style comes through. There are a few scenes that are a little smoother, but really, Black Swans, there's a lot of rough edges in that film.
Yeah. And I think it works.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed the movie. And the thing is, it's not like it's a surprising film. It's like not a whole lot happens in the movie where you're just like, oh, I didn't see that coming. I mean, I'm not going to say anything, you know, that happens in it, but it's not like it's a shocker of a movie. It's just very well executed from beginning to end.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and I mean, Natalie Portman in that lead role, she is flawless.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, she really has to come at that character from almost literally two different directions.
Yeah.
And she does both directions, I think, perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's a very good movie. I'm giving it a rocks. What's your official grade?
Oh, absolutely rocks. You were a little afraid to say that it's your favorite film of the year. So far, based on what I've seen, it is my favorite film of the year.
Yeah. I think it'll probably end up, this is my prediction right now. It's probably going to end up in my top 10 list. But I think this is what's going to win the Oscar. I already, just the sense I get, I just see this as, unless it loses steam, which happens sometimes in mid-January with films, I think it's prime to win.
I would love for that to happen. I have a feeling it's probably a little too dark to win. I think something like 127 Hours or maybe even The Social Network might have a better chance of winning the Academy's vote. But hey, if Black Swan wins, I'm going to be ecstatic about that.
I think it would. Let's move on real quick. We're going to cover the next one, which is I Love You, Philip Morris, in which Jim Carrey plays a con artist and prison escapee named Stephen Russell, who carries on a long-term love affair with a man he's met in the big house.
I became a con man.
Cash or charge?
Charge.
Credit card fraud? I was selling bad tomatoes. Anything to make a buck. Maybe it wasn't the right thing to do.
When I called all your references, well, they couldn't speak more highly of
me. I cannot speak more highly about Stephen Russell.
Maybe it wasn't the moral thing to do.
You on the lam again?
You always knew me best.
But I had no choice.
Stephen Russell, you are sentenced to 25 years.
My name is Stephen Russell.
Nice to meet you, Stephen Russell. My name is Philip Morris. This is Destiny.
You didn't get a chance to see this, probably because it's not released yet. I got it as an award screener.
I haven't seen it. It's been pushed back a lot.
Yeah, it was like supposed to come out like a year ago.
I think so. It played Sundance 2009, I think. January 2009. That's crazy.
It's good. It's sort of like a very, very gay version of Catch Me If You Can. And the whole point is that he's a man. He's in just extremely not interested in. He's very gay, and he even uses that in prison. He uses that. Let's just say he uses that as a as for commerce. Let's just put that out.
Those are his cigarettes.
Yes. So it's very, very. It's pretty explicit at times, but not overtly explicit. You know what? Let's go to a break because I got a couple more things to say about that.
Okay.
I'll finish talking about it in the next break.
All right.
Hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. Let's finish up a couple discussions we had, specifically I Love You, Philip Morris, which I kind of had to rush out in there. It's the whole point is the story. Jim Carrey, he plays a guy who sort of like lives in this Christian conservative situation, and then he decides to leave it because he's got a wife and you know whatever, and he's like, no, I'm not going to be, pretending to be straight and having affairs. And then he just goes and
he's kind of living a lie.
Yeah, he dives into the gay lifestyle, right. But he also, that's not what gets him in prison. What gets him in prison is the fact that, he points out, he's like, because he has boyfriends and he buys them gifts and he has these lavish parties and stuff like that, and he like works at like a produce stand, produce at the supermarket. So he needs to make money other ways. So what he does is he runs cons and scams to sort of feed his economic lifestyle, and that's what lands him in prison. But then the same thing, like, is that he uses. Let's just say he smokes a lot of cigarettes, as you would say.
Oh, okay. Hence Philip Moore. I get it.
Well, it's actually the guy's real name. His lover, it's based on a true story, and the lover's real name is Philip Morris, which I think is a really funny, sort of ironic, just how they really push that imagery in the movie.
Right.
And that's what I say. It's sort of like Catch Me If You Can, where it had that whole story of a guy who is constantly cheating the system. He gets out of prison and he pretends to be a lawyer, he pretends to be a CFO, and he steals money, embezzles money. He's constantly getting caught and going in and out of prison. So it's kind of has that thing, but it's a lot more, it's a lot darker, but more twisted, but in a very, it's not dark in the traditional sense you'd say something's dark. It's more it's like, it plays like a black comedy, something like Parents.
Okay.
Or Fido.
I can't believe you pulled out Parents out of nowhere.
Somebody had just watched it. Somebody I saw on Twitter, I think it was like Elizabeth Rapp on Twitter, was talking about watching Parents. Somebody, I think it was her, who said that.
That Randy Quaid gym.
Randy Quaid. And or like Fido, where it has this sort of this idealistic, it plays visually like a happy-go-lucky movie, but it's got a real dark tone underneath.
Okay.
So.
I'm really curious to see it. I've heard nothing but good from it ever since it played Sundance almost 2 years ago now. Jeez, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very well acted. I enjoyed it a lot, and it just has some fantastic one-liners.
Is Ewan McGregor really given much? Mm-hmm. This really kind of seems like Jim Carrey's movie.
Oh, it totally is. I mean, even though technically Ewan McGregor plays the title character,
right?
It's not about him. It's about it's about the character of Steven and his, because the whole thing is he doesn't just get out of prison and leave. He's totally in love with this guy, and so he keeps trying to, and that's his Achilles heel. That's why he keeps getting caught, because he keeps trying to have a connection with this man even after out of prison and that sort of thing. And it's not that he's a bad person. It's just that he's so traceable going back to this guy, and it is sort of this tragic love story between these two. But yeah, Ewan McGregor, he's in the movie, and he does a good job, but it's totally not about him.
Totally Jim Carrey's movie.
Yeah.
And now, is this more kind of, is it more comedic than dramatic, or does it kind of ride the Truman Show kind of that line between the two?
Even more, I would say more, it'd be more like a whimsical version of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. How Eternal Sunshine was a dramatic thing, but it was so quirky. But if you just add some humor on top of that, but not, because the Truman Show had that overt Jim Carrey comedy,
right?
That
there were moments.
Good evening, afternoon, and good night. That whole thing, and he's sort of goofy and silly. But this has, or like maybe Man in the Moon, which had funny parts to it, but it was ultimately, it's a drama,
right?
I would characterize it that way, but it has some very funny moments.
Do you think any awards buzz for Carrey from this, or probably not?
I don't know. He's got an uphill battle. There's a lot of other. I mean, I mean, James Franco is already going to be probably going to win it.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, you've got James Franco and Colin Firth, the kind of the people that you know for sure are going to get in there, and I think Jim Carrey's kind of got an uphill to climb anyway, even if he's playing the field by himself, because I'm not really sure the Academy.
Yeah, I just don't think it's getting a wide enough play. I just don't think that there's enough awareness of it. Mm-hmm. Out there, I mean, because you even mentioned like Colin Firth, the King's Speech. I mean, that is not really out yet, but it's already getting that early buzz. And I love you, Philip Morris. The sense I get from that is like, didn't that come out already? Kind of reaction.
They just kind of dropped it here. They thought it was.
I mean, I would say it's an Oscar worthy performance. I just don't think he's going to get nominated.
That's a shame.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm going to say it rocks. So,
well, I will say it rocks as well.
Well, you can't. I mean, you haven't seen it.
But I trust you.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. So, but you disagree with me on The Fountain. That's the thing. Let's talk about that. I'm not digging at you. I just want to find out. Talk to me about The Fountain, because I hated it. That was like one of my top worst movies of that year. Because I've known people who've loved that movie.
Right. I just thought The Fountain was an incredible depiction of one man's obsession and how you really didn't know whether or not the two bookending stories, chronologically anyway, if those really happened or if they were just in his head. And just the way that Aronofsky shot it, just the beautiful way that he depicted, you know, the travel through outer space. I just thought every element about it I thought was amazing. And I really felt something between Hugh Jackman and Rachel Weisz in that movie.
Okay. I'll give you that.
It just kind of got to me, I guess.
Well, that's good. Well, no, I mean, it was just funny because there's always movies that some people, like one that came out last year that I really loved, but everybody else seemed to hate. And every now and then when I see somebody like on Twitter say, oh, I like that movie, I'm like, yes, I did too. It was The Box. Richard Kelly's The Box.
I thought The Box was okay.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was.
That's weird. I've never heard somebody say that. I've always heard people either really, like the three people who really liked it, or people just hate it.
See, I really liked the premise. I really liked the simplicity of the premise. But I really thought that Richard Kelly. I really thought he let a lot of his. A lot of themes that he likes to instill in a lot of his movies, I thought it really kind of felt shoehorned.
It does. It gets forced near the end.
It really does, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think the first 30, 45 minutes of The Box, I really enjoyed. But
it's Richard Madsen. It was originally a Twilight Zone
story. Right, and yeah, that Twilight Zone story is amazing. But I thought the way that Richard Kelly directed that also was really well done.
Okay. Let's move on. Now that we're in the middle segment, let's move on to the box office with last week's winners. The big one was, of course, Harry Potter won the 5-day spread, and it won the 3-day spread, but Tangled.
Like you thought it would.
What?
Like we thought it would.
Well, yeah. Well, but barely. That's right. The whole thing. I think Tangled really gave it a run for its money.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did the math. It's like it made like $49.1 million, and then Tangled make 48 and change over the 3-day spread. The right. difference was like $320,000, which is less than 1%.
I know, that's crazy. And
I mean
the per theater average for Tangled was a lot higher because it was on like something like 500 less screens than Harry Potter.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it did have the advantage. It had the 3D advantage. That's true, but. Mm-hmm. It had so many children go. I think that actually washes out because so many children went, and that pushes down the ticket price.
True, but they also have to have parents accompany them, and they have to buy a ticket as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I either way you slice it, it's a really impressive take for Tangled.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And which it was a good movie. It definitely deserved it.
I still haven't had a chance to see it. I need to.
It's cool. It's a neat little movie, and mm-hmm. If you hate 3D, don't go see it. You know, wait till Blu-ray. But if you do like 3D, I like 3D. You know, we've had this discussion.
We've had this debate.
But being a computer generated film, the 3D mm-hmm. works no matter how you do it. It's not converted or anything like that.
Right.
Now, what do you think is going to happen this weekend?
I think Tangled's going to take it.
Because you're the box office guru for Film School Rejects.
I am a guru, I guess you could kind of. I'm the box office reporter, the box office.
Oh, give something yourself a credit. You are the box office god.
I'm the god. I'm the guru. I know all. I can predict these things in my sleep. So I'm going to say that the drop-off on Harry Potter is going to be large enough that it's going to knock it down to the number two spot. I think Tangled's going to be number one.
Okay. It just because it's kind of had that Harry Potter's had the 2 weeks and Tangled's just had the one.
Well, I mean, I just think that the drop in Harry Potter is going to be larger than the drop in Tangled. And I don't think anything opening this weekend is going to give either of them a run for their money. I think maybe
I'll be surprised if a Warrior's Tale gets in like the top five.
The Warrior's Way. I think I don't know. I think it might be like 8 or 9 million opening weekend, which could put it in the number three or four spot. It could, but I wouldn't bet money on it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, again, it's going to be that the lion's share is going to Harry Potter and Tangled.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely.
And then the Nutcracker. This is my prediction on the Nutcracker. Depending on what the final theater count is, it is going to be one of those record-breaking films like Transylvania and Delgo, where it has such a low per theater count for its opening. I don't think anybody cares about this movie.
I don't either, and I just looked it up really quick. It made like $1,500 per theater average last weekend,
Really? Yeah. How many theaters was it in? That's like nothing.
That was in 42 theaters.
Oh, that's terrible for 42.
It was awful. It made, as much as it made back, they could buy a Lexus, maybe.
A used
Lexus, yeah.
It was like when I saw Delgo 2 years ago. I went to a theater. I took my kids on a Friday. And then the report that came out, the per theater average was like $120.
For
like the weekend. And I sat there and I said, wow, this is one of the first times that I significantly, for a percentage, like statistically significantly contributed to a per theater average.
You can look at the numbers and say, I was responsible for that.
For more than 10% of the revenue in that theater.
Exactly.
It's one of the few movies that I've ever seen that nobody else was in the theater. It's almost always just one other person somewhere. And Delgo was one of them.
Yeah, so. I don't think that's ever happened to me. That's really? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. It was me and my kids, and they were running around. I'm like, I don't care.
Well, yeah, why bother? Yeah, you're on your phone through the movie. Why? It is your living room at that point.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've done that when I've gone to like theaters when I'm in the back and there's like a person way in the front. I'll be on my phone the whole time.
Yeah.
Because I'm not disturbing anybody.
Who cares?
I'm not pirating the. I think I saw The Love Guru in an empty theater, back in 2008 as well.
I still haven't seen that either.
You're not missing much.
It's what I've heard.
Okay, so that's a box office prediction. Let's do a Fat Guy 5. And since nothing's opening wide that any of us care to do anything about a Fat Guy 5.
Not wide, anyway.
Yeah. Well, so with the Black Swan, let's talk the 5 Natalie Portman movies that have turned us on.
And yes, we got this down to 5, believe it or not.
Yes. Well, you know, it's funny. I actually had to think because if you look at, like for example, she was in the 3 Star Wars movies.
Right.
And while she looked good in that, when her top part got ripped off in the second movie, when she's in that white outfit,
right.
I wouldn't exactly call that, like, I got turned on by her. That was the Princess Leia in a brass bikini shot.
There was maybe a bit of a turn on for that. Mm. But I mean, in Star Wars 3, I mean, she's pregnant through the whole thing there. So that's kind of instant turn off.
Unless you're into that sort of thing.
For me, anyway. I don't know about the rest of the world.
They have whole websites and industry based on that.
That's what I've heard.
the first one, I'll do this one. You can do the next one.
Okay.
Because we just agreed on this list. I made a bunch. But Closer, not the Chris Edward TV show. Closer, which I hated as a movie. I just hated that movie.
Oh, really?
But she played a stripper. And you had her ass in your face while she was doing a private show. I'm okay with that.
Ass in the face is always that's generally a turn on. Yeah.
Yes. Generally a turn. Well, it depends on who it
usually,
is.
Usually. Yeah. It's true.
I mean, if Michael Moore, I don't know if I want that ass.
Oh, wow.
Why did I stampede to Michael
you
Moore?
Jump right to Michael. There were so many leap pads we could have taken to get to Michael Moore.
The sad thing is I actually, that was not my first choice, but all my other choices were like, they were either porno stars like Ron Jeremy or they're dead like John Candy. And I'm like, well, I can't use John Candy. And then I went from John Candy to Michael Moore because John Candy was in Michael Moore's only fictional
and film. Now we know the Kevin Carr train of thought.
It is a scary train. Wow. It is like the train that Natalie Portman rides in The Black Swan as she drives crazy.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of scary.
But closer. No, the only thing is she didn't get naked. She needs to just do the naked scene. She does too many bullshit naked scenes. That's all there is to
Bullshit naked scenes. I could say, yeah. Because she has done a few nudie scenes, but there's always been some kind of an obstruction.
Yeah, just show us your boobs. I mean, it's like, and that's the thing that bothers me, is Darren Aronofsky got Marissa Tomei to just dance around naked through the whole damn movie and The Wrestler. I mean, come on, can't you just... I mean, you it's not like you didn't see her nipples through her leotard in The Black Swan. Come on, show us your boobs.
The quote on the box for Black Swan. Come on, show us your boobs, Kevin Carr.
Show us your boobs, Kevin Carr. Back guys in the movie. Perfect. We are so much more intellectual than any other podcast out there.
Of course. It's like it's like Film Spotting Bad Guys in the Movies.
Well, you know, it's like whenever I'm on the Criterion cast, it's such an intellectual show, and I'm like, why am I even on this? Because I'm like, they're like, I like this movie. I'm like, well, Criterion's awesome because you can pause on the boobs. I'm sorry.
Hey. Sometimes the intellectuals like to go to Dave and Buster's as well. So what are you gonna do? What are you
Dave
gonna do?
And Buster's.
Yeah. I don't know. Shack. I don't know why I made that correlation. I was trying to think of like
didn't go nearly as lowbrow as
I was trying to think of like the most unpretentious place yet still holds some kind of hold onto it.
No, that's where you failed, because there is no hold on to sort of respect or dignity.
That's true.
You're just trying to be nice since it's the first time you're on this show.
I am. I don't want to turn people off. I don't want to be like Michael Moore's ass in your face.
Anyways, speaking of asses in our face, you can do the next one if you aren't.
Yeah, the next one is V for Vendetta, and if you like bald women, which. Sometimes
again,
there's a website for everything.
There's a whole industry built on this.
There has to be.
It's amazing how much fetish, how much she her roles borderline it will attract a certain fetish.
Yeah,
like V for Vendetta, you got the cue ball,
right?
Fetish.
The cue ball. And
the fact she like dresses up like as a French maid, and I mean she dresses up in that baby doll outfit in that movie.
Oh God, I totally forgot about that. She does.
Wow. How did you forget about that?
I forgot about that. I was hooked on the bald head the whole time.
And like the Black Swan, it's like she's all the damage because she's a ballerina.
Oh
like,
yeah,
all the damage to her feet. So you're like, okay, well there's your foot fetish. You got your bald fetish. You've got. We've got another fetish coming. It was not really much a fetish, as sort of a criminal offense.
I'll let you take that one.
Do you want any more to say about V for Vendetta?
I mean, she is bald and she's quite the badass in that.
Yeah.
I think V for Vendetta and G.I. Jane would make a nice double feature for anyone that has cueballs.com bookmarked.
You're picking up that ball and running with it, aren't you?
I'm not saying anything about that. You're picking up that ball. Oh, never mind.
Oh, okay. we'll move on to the next one, which is it's not a full film, but it's I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, but it's Hotel Chevalier.
Chevalier, I believe.
I don't know if I spelled it right, so you may be reading it in the show notes.
I might be reading it phonetically wrong. that happens. It's all right.
Anyone who doesn't know what that is the short film prequel to the Darjeeling Limited, in which it gives the backstory of Jason Schwartzman character, his character as she was his girlfriend or something like that, shows up and breaks up. And here's where I go. I liked it because it turned me on, but it was an example of the bullshit nudity.
This is probably the most criminal offense in the obstructed nudity of Natalie Portman's career. This one just probably takes the
case. To clarify, this is not the criminal offense we were talking about.
No, no, no. But this should be a criminal offense. Because she is completely nude in
I think
in
she has like leg warmers on or something like that.
Okay. Hey, another fetish. There you go.
There you go.
If you're into leg warmers.
Yeah, but it's like, she's like, okay, where's the camera? I'm going to lean exactly to it. I'm going to put my arms over my breast, so I'm naked, but you're not going to see anything.
Right. And then Jason Schwartzman is going to come up behind me and cover me in a yellow bathrobe.
Yeah, and she has bruises on her legs, so she kind of has a Courtney Love sort of look to her a bit.
Yeah, and this was, I believe this was probably shot soon after she filmed V for Vendetta, so her hair was still growing back. She kind of had a buzz cut in this.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was funny because I was actually over at Neil Miller's house when it went live online. We were recording Fat Guys, and we watched it, and we're just like, because we were like, oh, so excited, and we're like, okay, that was good, and it was a neat little short, but we're like, that's bullshit.
1 star. I don't care how good it was.
I can't wait till she gets in her 40s and she needs to go for an Oscar.
Hopefully. How long do we have to wait for that? How old is she now?
I don't know. Young enough to talk about the next movie.
Oh, Lord.
And that would be Leon.
Bring on the criminal offense.
Yes. This is
for everyone that's turned on by 12-year-olds smoking cigarettes.
For all you pervs in the audience, this is the world's introduction to Natalie Portman.
I don't know much about your demographic, Kevin, but
well, we do have teenagers, 18-age guys who will listen to the show. So at least they're not in the criminal realm for this film.
Right. There's nothing illegal about this. You're absolutely right. All you 12 and 13-year-old boys, go watch Leon. Have fun with it.
The reason I put this on the list, because I just saw her as a kid when I saw the movie, but I saw her being interviewed, and it was probably for one of the Star Wars films, because that was what probably brought her, that's what brought her the most attention in pop culture. And somebody, I think the interviewer had asked, is this, do you get recognized most for that? And she's like, no, I get recognized most for The Professional. And she's like, I would get letters from it. And now even when she was doing this interview, she was like over 18, but she was like, she still gets fan mail from like guys in prison about The Professional. She's like, I was like 13 at the time, and yes, I'm not now, but you can tell she was seriously creeped out by that.
I can imagine that she is, because I'm sure she gets a lot of probably old, crusty old men coming up to her and asking her to sign DVD copies of The Professional.
They look at me like, I don't like you now. You got too many curves.
You grew up nice.
Yes. Anyways. Wow. You can do the last one. This one's yours.
I will do the last one because I personally think this is the hottest thing that Natalie Portman has ever done. The digital short that she did called Natalie Raps, if you haven't seen it, go to Hulu, type in, or YouTube, and type up Natalie Raps. Mm-hmm. It's basically just her completely breaking away from this innocent aura that she might have had by just rapping and throwing out F-bombs and cuss words and suck my D's and all that. Is just,
you can say suck my dick.
So, oh, yeah, that's right. We're in third. So, yeah, suck my dick. And,
even though she doesn't have one, as far as I know.
Even though, but you know, I don't know what it is, something, and I'm probably going to catch so much flack for this, but something about a woman saying suck my dick, I don't know. That's kind of hot to me.
That speaks to you?
It's kind of hot to me. I don't know why. I don't know what it is about it. And don't judge me. Well, there's that sort of
aggressive. Yeah, I mean, when you got a hot girl like her, and aggressive, and it's not as much the innocence as her class. She's very classy.
Right.
And this is her just getting rid of all that class.
Well, and there's the little section of it where she's talking about her time at Harvard,
Yeah.
And she's saying how she smoked all the dope and cheated on all her tests and snorted all the yay. Yeah. Very hot.
Yeah, and the only problem with this movie or this short is it has Chris Parnell in it. And it redeems itself at the end because she beats him with a chair.
Smashes a chair over his head when he makes the dumbass mistake of asking her which Hollywood hunk she wants to smooch on. She just hits him over the head with a chair.
Yeah, yeah. So that one, I forgave that because Chris Parnell is like, he is a wet blanket to any film. He just takes me right out of it. Unless the movie's like Douchey McDouchen Schmerz or something like that, and then you'd be perfect.
Which that was a good movie.
I think it was called The Brother Solomon.
Oh, burn. I'm trying to remember Chris Parnell in a movie.
Oh, no, he's been in a lot. He was in Birds of Hot Rod.
I'm sure he has. He's so forgettable.
Yeah, he's always like, just shows up. And he's like a bit part, but he does show up in these movies.
I'm sure he had a role in Walk Hard somewhere. I just don't remember.
Probably.
I don't know why I jumped that.
I think he was the penis. The penis in the face.
Oh, okay. Probably.
Anyways, let's wrap this up with a dishonorable mention. I have to throw in, as Bruno would say, Mr. Megorian's Wunderbar Emporium, in which she was completely unattractive because she didn't look at all like a woman. She looked like a 12-year-old boy in a dress. I mean, she was so asexual in that movie, which I think is kind of interesting because she is a very sexy woman, a very beautiful woman, and then he just... And I was like, wow.
That just goes to show how good of an actress she is, that she can turn it off like that if she needs to.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny is she looked more like a boy in this than she did in Leon.
Wow. That takes talent.
Yeah.
Good for her. I
Bravo. She should have won an Oscar for that.
She should have. What happened to her Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium Oscar nomination? Seriously.
All right. Shameful. I think we've run this show into the ground. Let's go ahead and say goodbye for this segment. When we come back, we'll talk DVDs.
And we are back with Fat Guys at the Movies. We're here to talk some more movies.
That's right. Well, and you know, if you missed the end of my Philip Morris review, you can go to the internet only segment. And if you want to hear just probably one of the most more offensive Fat Guy Fives we've done in a long time,
I was offended.
I know. And usually we can be offensive in that segment, but yeah, we covered a certain number of bases with that. So.
A lot.
So yeah, you can go check that out on the internet if you're listening on the radio. But for those on the internet, we can just move on. What do we got coming up next here, Jeremy?
Well, it's time for the world famous DVD roundup.
Wasn't that anticlimactic? I mean, I prepped you
a little. Yeah,
I prepped you for that so much, and for years I've been saying I was going to get a whipping sound, and now it just—I don't know—it just seems pointless.
It's just your mouth making the whipping noise.
Wow. That sounds way dirtier than anything we said in the last segment.
Ooh. Sorry.
Anyways, you can go first with your what your picks are for DVDs that came out this week.
My picks are this week for the DVDs. Well, Going the Distance, the romantic comedy starring Justin Long and Drew Barrymore. I like that noise you made. That was the I didn't. Really,
I hated
that was movie. The I hated this movie. Continue.
As if I'm trying to be polite to my guest host.
Yeah, I thought it was sweet. I thought it was a good comedy. It had some really nice R-rated moments, but it was also pretty sweet.
Do you normally like romantic comedies? Just out of curiosity,
if it's
a Reese Witherspoon movie, you're gonna like be like, ah.
I can like romantic comedies. I have the ability to like romantic comedies, but I have no patience for...
What are you, the biotic man? I have the ability.
I can rebuild it. But I have no patience whatsoever for saccharine comedy or saccharine emotion at all, which a lot of romantic comedies fall into.
Yeah, they're formulaic. They're just
four. They really are.
That's really all they are.
They really are.
Yeah. All right, what else do we got?
Well, next up, if you're anything like me, Kevin, you grew up on Looney Tunes.
Yes.
And to have Looney Tunes cartoons at your whim, at your beck and call, is just a childhood fantasy. And this week, we get two more DVDs, the Looney Tunes Superstars Foghorn Leghorn and Friends, and the Looney Tunes Superstars Sylvester and Tweety.
And you know what's great about those is they're the good old-fashioned racist, politically incorrect, violent Looney Tunes. None of this like post 1980s garbage.
Yeah, I think growing up, you were either a Disney kid or a Looney Tunes kid, and the Looney Tunes kids were always a little cooler.
I loved Looney Tunes. I also have a lot of love for Tom and Jerry. About racist kind of ones. Those.
No, yeah, no doubt. Or even going back to some of those Popeye cartoons.
Yeah. Popeye.
Really racist.
Yeah, yeah. What else? You got another one on there.
Yeah, my pick this week, if you see nothing else on DVD, I say go see Valhalla Rising, which is Nicholas Winding Refn's his Viking movie. It's amazing.
Wow.
Such a good movie. And don't expect just wall-to-wall action. I mean, there is a lot of violence and there's a lot of brutality, but it's not just all the way. It's not like 300 or Gladiator.
A lot of violence and brutality. But there's a sweet Reese Witherspoon romantic comedy in there as well.
It's a little saccharine. I'm going to say, Valhalla Rising, it gets a little saccharine.
That's funny.
When Jennifer Aniston shows up, that it kind of derails.
I would love to see Jennifer Aniston show up in the middle of a Viking movie. I would watch that so much. I would rewind it. Because you know she wouldn't survive.
Oh, no. She'd be in it for... She'd have that little cameo, two-minute cameo.
Off goes
before she gets beheaded.
Speaking of beheadings, not really. I'll move on to mine. The Sorcerer's Apprentice from Disney, which was okay. Did better overseas, but of course this is expanded from the original Sorcerer's Apprentice short, which is also out. The Fantasia 2000 double pack from Disney is out first time on Blu-ray.
Yeah, look at Disney doing synergy like that.
I love Disney stuff, and I love the fact that they got all these three movies are all kind of tied together. Mm-hmm. On the Fox side of things, you got Night and Day with Cameron Diaz and Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
You also have 12 Men of Christmas, which is not an adult film. It stars Kristen Chenoweth, and it's a cute little Christmas movie, sort of like a ABC Family kind of movie. There's also Vampires Suck, which is does not totally suck. It's probably the best film that Jason Friedberg and Aaron Seltzer have ever done, which means it's like just okay.
I didn't know they were allowed to have a best movie.
Well, I mean, if you've seen some of the other ones, this one's actually funny because they actually stick to the Twilight thing, and the girl does a fantastic Kristen Stewart impression.
Okay.
And then there's also Sid and Marty Krofft's Saturday Morning Classics, which is a compilation of like their shows, you know, like stuff like, you know, H&R Puffin stuff. You've got the Electro Woman and Dinah Girl, and you've got the Wonder Bug. All these different like weird shows from the 70s, and it's fantastic, and it'll give you nightmares. The stinker is Twilight Saga Eclipse, even though I thought it was okay. And they're dropping on Saturday, which is stupid.
Which it's gonna make more money on DVD sales than any of these other movies we talked about combined. I'm sure.
Except for maybe Sid and Marty Krofft. No, I'm kidding.
Hopefully.
Anyways, we got to wrap it up here. We got The Warrior's Way and The Nutcracker 3D. Preemptive sucks. Black Swan, we both said rocked. And I Love You, Phil and Morris. I said it rocked. Next week, you got Chronicles of Narnia, Voyage of the Dawn Trader, and The Tourist. Thank you again to Jeremy Kirk from The Golden Briefcase.
Thank you for having me on.
Go to either the Golden Briefcase website or Fat Guys of the Movies, and I'll have his contact information. You can hit him up on Twitter and all that good stuff. But until then, we got to go. We will talk to you next week.